This is a Connectability Radio production.
Kids have stress too, with Ann Muser and Robin Listener.
And welcome to Kids Have Stress Too. Our presenters tonight are Robin Listener, who's the manager at Boys and Girls Club of East Scarborough, Special Needs Consultation and Coordination Program, and Ann Muser, and she's a Special Needs Consultant from the same place.
Okay, so as Ann said, we all experience stress in our lives, and children do as well. Children experience stress that's unique to their lives, but also they experience your stress because they feel how the environment changes. So our goal tonight is to come away with a few different ideas, strategies, techniques that you can use to help children de-stress somewhat. Anyways, stress is a normal part of everyday life. A small amount of stress is actually stimulating. It actually helps you to be motivated and to actually move forward and to do things. So everyone needs some stress in their life. If they don't have stress, then they're dead. But too much of it can be overwhelming. And the kinds of things that can happen when you get too much stress and when you're overwhelmed is that your brain wiring and your body chemistry can actually be changed. It can be altered. Isn't that interesting? It can actually change what's happening inside your body. We know that stress causes illnesses, but it also just basically changes what's going on in your body as well. So what happens is the brain signals your body's sympathetic nervous system to dispatch adrenaline and other messengers, chemical messengers, to your systems in your body, such as your heart, your lungs, and your muscles, and it revs them all up into high gear. Have you ever heard of the flight or fight syndrome or response? Something that was very common in human beings a very, very long time ago when we were facing very, very critical types of situations like having to deal with wild animals before we had cities and towns and those kinds of things, and we needed to be able to act quickly, have that adrenaline happen very fast. That's the kind of thing that happens when we're under stress. We get that adrenaline, everything revs up very, very high. But we don't really need everything up that high anymore. So then the pituitary gland will release, okay, we're going to have to say this word now, adrenocorticotropin, ACTH. It goes to the adrenal gland and triggers release of cortisol. Cortisol is a stress hormone. Some of you have probably heard about cortisol when you listen to the news and they're doing little medical pieces. And they're saying that too much stress is not good for you. Cortisol builds up in your system. It's not good for you. Well, when we have too much stress, that's what's happening. We get that cortisol. We get that stress hormone built up. And the cortisol gives the body staying power, which keeps the body on high alert, which is useful if you need all your systems revved up and on high alert. But generally, children don't. They don't need that. And yet, that's what cortisol will do. Prolonged stress, prolonged exposure to stressful situations will keep that adrenaline high, will keep the cortisol high, and it keeps all your systems really revved up. And that's not good, because that can start to actually destroy some of the neural connections in the brain. So it actually starts to kill off little connections in the brain that are really quite important in young developing children. But what we do with children every day and the relationships that we build actually help to lower the stress levels that they have and lower that cortisol production. And that means better brain development. So this is really critical stuff. Okay.
Now, what we're going to do for just a minute is we're going to talk about some of the signs and symptoms of stress.
Divided into body and mind, head, neck, and stomach aches, shallow breathing, rapid heartbeat, dry mouth. We never think of those things. Sweaty palms, skin rash is another one. that some children, when they're stressed or upset, will get rashy. Clenched jaw. Disturbed sleep. We mentioned disturbed sleep there. Overly fatigued. Illness. Just generally getting more ill than they usually are. Shaky. In the mind, we're looking at poor concentration, forgetful, less creative, difficulty problem solving, not spontaneous, easily distracted, confused, or irrational. Now, some of those are ones that you might be more aware of in slightly older children, you know, in school agers. Let's go on to the next. Intense feelings, withdrawn, I think we mentioned that there too. Fearful, scared of things, and I think we worried, we've talked about. Anxious, frustrated, sad. Overwhelmed, panicky, overly sensitive, irritable, and overexcited. Again, you can see all these things that, you know, and exhibited with behavior of whining, clingy, poor listening, biting, kicking, crying, hair twisting, thumb sucking, nail biting, daydreaming, fighting with peers, fighting with family, fighting in your home. If you see if a kid comes in and he's just raring to roar that day. Impulsive, and lack or increase in appetite. So there is a fair list of things that children exhibit, children and adults exhibit when they're stressed. Now if we look at our list, some of the things we mentioned were things like poor concentration, impulsive, behavior problems, distracted. I mean, if you get a child coming into your home and is showing those things, sometimes, especially because there's a lot of media hype these days about things like ADHD, you know, and I think probably a lot of you have heard of that, and you might think, oh, this kid's got it, you know, has ADHD. Now, it may well be a sign of stress and not ADHD. One of the things when they're looking at a child who's showing some of these symptoms, a specialist would look at eliminating stress, not just assuming that this is a ADHD, maybe it's because of stress. So now, why is it important to even bother try and help kids cope with stress? No matter how hard we try, as parents or as caregivers, stress is always going to be there. We can protect our children and our child care children or whatever as much as we want, but we have no control over illness. We have no control over what happens out of the home. We have no control over what happens at school. And you also don't know when there are going to be accidents. We don't know when someone else in the family is going to be ill. So there's always going to be stress, no matter how much we try and protect kids. So we can't ignore and we can't let go, because the children need to have strategies in order to develop into healthy human beings that they can cope with stress. Okay? So we can't get rid of stress, but we can do a few things to help children cope with stress. So the first thing that we're going to look at is your stress stoplight. The stress stoplight is a visual concrete tool that you can use with young children. We all know that young children need to see things as well as hear things. We know that they need to be able to have something that they can relate to. A stoplight, all young children know what a stoplight is and how a stoplight works. So when you're using this stress stoplight, basically if a child is under stress, they're exhibiting signs of stress, signs that you have noticed. Because young children are not terribly good at identifying that themselves. Very rarely are you going to have a 3-year-old walk up to you and say, "I need a bubble bath, I am so stressed." They just don't know how to do that yet. So you are probably going to have to notice the stress yourself by looking at some of the signs and symptoms that Anne pointed out. Then we go to the red on the stoplight. This is stress, and this is where we want to help children to just stop. Let's just stop for a second. Calm down. Then you can start to use some of the strategies that we're going to talk about tonight.
depending on who the child is, depending on what their interests are, what their needs are, that will dictate which kind of strategy you might choose. But you'll start to put into place some strategies. And maybe we can start to move into this yellow area where we use those tools, those strategies. And if we can get that child calmed down, a little more focused again, then they're back down to the green light where they can go. They can cope with everything, they can head out, and they can start. This is yours to take, so you can put it up wherever you want to put it up. If it's on the fridge, it might be on a wall in the playroom. It depends. Where do you experience children having the most stress? That's where you may put it. You might make some extra copies, and maybe it's going to be in many different places. Maybe it's going to be in your own car so it can remind you of how to cope with your own stress. So we need to explore how we cope with stress. Space and time works for everybody, doesn't it? Sometimes we'll be in a really stressful situation, and maybe a few weeks later we actually can laugh about it. If you experience something very stressful or something that really made you mad, if somebody came over and tried to start to get you to talk about it, and you may not want to. You may want to remove yourself and reflect. It seems to me that you're upset or worried about something, and so you're reading this book. I'm going to let you do that for 30 minutes or however long you think is reasonable. But please know, I'm going to come back and ask, and we really do need to talk about this, even if you just let me know that you're okay, what's going on. So you set up a situation where he has time to prepare that you're going to come and ask him again. As I said, even just to let you know that you're all right. He may not want to talk about the issue per se, but he may be able to just let you know, I thought about it, I'm fine. I remember distinctly one of the things that happened in my household growing up was the stereo going on and 60s Motown music going on and my mom dancing. And you knew that something was up when she did that. But at the same time, it was also fun because we would join in and dance with her, and that actually became a fun thing to do that de-stressed our household. And I will still do that too in my own home occasionally. I'm saying, I've got to put on some Motown. I have to listen to some music and dance. When you're stressed, that adrenaline, that cortisol revs everything up, and you are full of energy. And if you can release it in some very productive ways, you know, cleaning the house, exercising, dancing, doing those kinds of things, that actually releases all of that adrenaline and cortisol and de-stresses. But that's where the energy comes from. So these are all really quite productive methods of de-stressing. And you could use pretty much all of these for children, too.
If you could find time to speak to your individual children, if you've got young children, you might start this with your own family first and then move into your the children that you're caring for, to see if you can get time to say, what do you worry about? I mean, it's not a question we ask. I don't think until we did this it was a question that I sat down and said to any of my children, what do you worry about? And you could say this to your childcare children. What do you worry? What upsets you? Or what do you do when you feel upset? These are sort of questions that if you can set aside time and spend a few minutes, this isn't something you do 5 minutes before you have to leave for school. If you have a quiet time with a child, it's a very good chance to ask them what worries you. Or the other thing is you might get the child to write or draw. What makes you worried, what upsets you, or what do you do when you feel upset?
One of the methods that you can use in order to talk with the children in your program and your own children to find out how they're doing and what worries them is to use a method called stop, look, and listen. And what it does is it helps you to figure out ways to talk with the children in an appropriate way, to give them the time to be able to express themselves. So the first thing is, you really do have to stop. You have to find the right time. As Anne said, 5 minutes before you have to leave for the walk to school is not the time to start talking about what upsets or stresses them. Find times that are just during play, where you can actually just have a casual conversation while they're doing other things, so that it's not this intense, okay, I'm going to sit in this chair, you're going to sit in this chair, now tell me what bothers you. You know what? Grown-ups pay hundreds of dollars to psychiatrists to go do that. You don't need to do that for little children. You can have those conversations during play, during, you know, helping, they're helping you to get lunch ready, provided you can actually listen. That's the other part of stop, look, and listen, is actually making sure that you can listen, that it's not one of those conversations where you get them started with what's happening in their life, what's bothering them, what do they like, what do they dislike, and you start listening, but then, oh, I've really got to get this ready for this afternoon, and so it evolves into, uh-huh, that's nice. Oh, really? Uh-huh. And it's not really a conversation. You know the age-old joke of a couple sitting at the breakfast table and one's reading the newspaper and the other one is talking away and they realize the other partner isn't listening, so they start talking about the blue dinosaurs that ran down the street last night. Well, that's nice, dear. That sounds really nice. You don't want to be that person. You want to actually be listening, to hear what that child is saying. The other part of stop, look, and listen is the look. You need to be able to look at the child, make eye contact or face contact, not only so they know that you're listening, but also so you can look and see what they look like. When we went through the signs and symptoms of stress earlier, it was very clear that some of the signs and symptoms are physical. Rashes, clenched jaws, tightened muscles, high color, you know, if really flushed, sweaty, breathing. Are they breathing very, very quickly, or is their breathing very shallow? All of those things you're not necessarily going to notice unless you really look at the child and see what's going on with them. Those are all pieces that help to tell you that this child may or may not need some extra support just right now to de-stress. So we have to take that time. And it's not always easy. It's a busy, busy job looking after children, particularly when you're doing it in your own home and you're on your own with the children. But you have to take that time, a little bit of time every day with every child if you can, to stop, look, and listen, to see how they're doing, to check in with them. Okay, so we're going to talk about a specific kind of strategy or game that we can play with young children. It's called What If. Often children are very worried about not being able to do something. Very, very worried about meeting expectations that we put there for them as adults. We need to let children imagine, what if? What if I can't print my name? Will the world end? Probably not. We need to help them to put things into perspective, because children's minds will race all over the place, and they'll come up with the worst answers in their head that you don't even know are in there. So we play some games. We can play What If. And the What If game is a method of using a picture, just a basic picture, with young children and getting them to look at it and start to think about what if questions. So if we look at, let me get an extra picture of. This is just a picture of two boys playing in the sandbox with a dump truck and some sand and a digger.
go wrong in this particular picture? What if it started to rain? So if you said to a child, what if it started to rain? What do you think they might say? We could go in time. We might have to stop playing. What if we have to stop playing? What if? We wouldn't have any more fun. Is that true? What else can we play? We can do something like this in time. But if you can lead children through the process so that, you know what? It's raining and you might have to stop playing here. Does it mean no more fun? No, it doesn't. And it's quite important that children understand that solutions to things that they can come up with. Pose those questions and the children can answer. You ask more questions, they can answer. You ask more questions, they can answer. Until you get to a place where they solve the situation and understand that situations that at first look like, uh-oh, this might be trouble, it's actually not a bad thing after all, that they can solve it. And it helps them to realize that they have some skills themselves to calm themselves down a little bit and come up with some solutions.
We want to teach children to solve problems, but you need to set the stage for that, and this is what we've been talking about. Now, these tips that I've got here are for child-sized problems, that children can have some input in, not for adult-sized problems. So, a child with a problem may be upset, angry, hurt, crying, and help your child by using a relaxation strategy such as some of the deep breathing. And if your child is unable to calm down, don't try and problem solve now. This is what Robin talked about, what we've all said. There's no point when the child is still upset of trying to problem solve at that point. And if this all happens just before you're dashing out to go to school to pick up kids, then don't try it then either, because you need to have uninterrupted time to help the child with the problem solving. Okay? Now, your job is not to solve the problem. It says be a coach. Your job is to help children articulate the problem and come up with some solutions. If you ask questions, children can maybe help come up with the solutions. In the way you were doing a little bit like with the what if game. But if they've got a particular scenario, you can try and get them to come up with solutions. You may give a few suggestions, but don't take over. And that's really hard for some of us not to do. It may be hard for you not to do too, because we really know what the children should be doing about a problem. But we've got to be a coach and get the children to solve the problem. Ask questions to help the child. Allow the child to come up with solutions. And even if they're really silly solutions, don't laugh at them, because that's their solutions. Encourage your child to find as many solutions as possible. Now, if you have a school-age child, it might be helpful to write them down as you're going. If you have a young child, you might just get two or three ideas from them. You know, obviously this is age dependent. But again, you may add a solution if it's just the way to help get them going, but try and get the child to solve this, because our goal ultimately is to get the child to solve the problems, not to get the child always to have us solving the problems. Okay, so help your child. You may help them, again, with questions. Think ahead as to whether their solutions might work. But so I've sort of just touched on this problem solving, some tips. But this is something to go over and to think about when you're dealing with problems. One of the other interesting things that you can do to help children, to walk them through the problem solving process, is to use, again, another visual. So one of the things that is really easy for children to visualize is their hand. So you can have a picture of a hand, or you can trace their hand. And what you do with that picture of their hand is to help them to decide, how big is this problem? So they've identified a problem. You know, what's the problem here? Because children can't solve a problem until they know what it is.
They have to be able to tell you what the problem is. So we know what it is. Now, how big of a problem is it? Is it number one, it's not too bad, it's okay? Or is it number five, it's a really, really, really big problem? Yeah. Or is it somewhere in between? For younger kids, and not necessarily school agers, won't need this, but younger kids, again, it's a visual, it helps them to understand how big is this. And then they can start to generate some ideas. How are we going to solve this? And as Anne said, this is where we are the coach, not the problem solver. If we give the answers, then the children won't learn to do it on their own when we're not around. And if they're school-age children and we give the answers, no. And you're stuck right there. You can't go any further. So you get the children to generate those answers for you. And then look at the ideas they came up with. And as Anne said, you could write some of those down. Write them down if they're school-age kids. Have them write them down. Figure out which one they want to try. And then try it. And help them try it. The other really important piece to problem solving with children is once they've identified it, once they've generated some ideas, once they've made a plan and they've tried it out, they need to evaluate it in some way. They need to be able to say, oh, I really wanted that truck. I decided to ask for a turn, and I got one. That really worked. But again, children don't spontaneously do that. Some adults don't spontaneously do that. So we need to help children to do that. So just through comments, getting to them to think about, oh, well, this was a problem, but I solved it, and it's okay now. So again, helping to lower that stress and to understand that they can lower their stress at other times all on their own too. So that's where we want to be a coach and a facilitator of problem solving, but not the problem solver. Otherwise, they'll always need you around to do it. And we want them to become more independent, both in your own homes, but in their lives, to be able to do this on their own.
All right, now, so far we've been talking about problem solving, but now we're going to move on, and we're going to talk about positive self-talk. Now, when children speak harshly or critically to themselves, they create more stress. Using a positive voice can lower stress. So that's what we're working towards. That's what we're going to be talking about now in the next few minutes. Now, often stress is caused by how we perceive a situation, not the actual situation. So an example of that would be, say a youngster has to read in school. Somebody in grade one or two has to read aloud. For one child, this is a piece of cake. This is great. I love reading out loud. You know. For another child, this is absolutely awful. This is just really traumatic. Now, if we think about what the children are saying to each other in their heads, what would the child who loves to do this be saying? I can't wait for my turn. I can do it. I'm good at this. And what about the child who is absolutely terrified by doing it? What are they saying? Don't pick me. I can't do it. I can't do this in front of other people. They may be just as capable a reader, but I can't do it. My son was like that, and I watched him have to present at a, you know, present a project, you know, as they do it about grade four. And he sat there. I happened to have been there. And he sat there. Like this. Absolutely. It was just agony. Finally, I said, stop. Because he was just, you could just see every possible body language that he could exhibit as to the fact that he was terrified was there. But for the kid who went just before him, it was a piece of cake. So it's not so much the situation, it's how we perceive it or how we see it and how we talk to ourselves about it. This is very different with different children. Another example that I've got is one of my daughters has real school troubles.
She's had lots of learning problems. And I called the school one day to tell her she had a doctor's appointment. The school called up to her classroom, but the phone wasn't working very well, so they just said, come to the office, please. Well, she didn't know what she'd done wrong, but she knew she'd done something terribly wrong. So she left. She took off and left the school. Whereas another child, my older daughter, if she'd been called down to the office, would be busy thinking, oh, I wonder what they want me to do now. You know, it wasn't an appropriate response of my younger daughter to leave, but she just thought for sure she was in trouble, and all it was a doctor's appointment. So, again, the situation is not the stress. It's how you perceive it and how you see it. Now, think of yourselves and think of the way we talk to ourselves. Often, you know, we say things quite negatively. For children, they would be saying things like, oh, I'm a loser, I'm stupid, I'm a klutz, or whatever the current term is. You know, so that positive self-talk, which is helping the child deal with stress, I can do it, I know how to do that, that type of talk helps children become aware of their strengths. A really good example of positive self-talk is the athletes, you know, especially with the Olympics relatively recently. There are a lot of sports psychologists over there helping the athletes to self-talk. I can do it. I'm good. I can do it. I can do it. And it is proven that this can help them. So that's an example of positive self-talk. Now we can teach children to use positive self-talk. Unfortunately, the negative voice is often stronger. I mean, kids will hear negative things, you know, oh, how could you be so stupid? Or at school, you know, the kids can be quite brutal, so that kids unfortunately tend to internalize that. So what we have to do is we have to help them to get over that, or not to do that. If you hear enough times, if people tell you enough that you're stupid, you're going to be thinking that you are and that you're not able to do things. So your self-image is affected. If the child feels okay, then they're feeling much better about themselves, and then they're ready to move ahead. So with kids who are preschool to age 6, the little ones, what we really want to get them to feel is that I am smart, I'm funny, and I'm lovable. I can do it. I did it. Good for me. You know, and these are the things that we can teach them. When you're looking at the 6 to 9s, you can teach them to challenge their negative thoughts. When they say, oh, I can't do this, or, you know, they're sitting there with their math in front of them. I can't do it. I'm too dumb. This is when you have an opportunity to challenge those thoughts. And then it's also a time when you can bring out the stoplights, bring them from red to yellow to green. What we're looking for when we're talking about some of the self-talk, we want to have a child talk to themselves from the standpoint of not saying, it's all my fault, I ruin everything, bad things always happen to me. And you will hear that from children. It's all, you know. But the better way, or what we want them to be thinking out, is bad things are not all my fault. Bad things sometimes happen, but not always. And life has its ups and downs. I mean, we can't prevent bad things from happening to kids. But rather than having the child think, it's all me, it's all my fault, this only happens to me, is looking at the fact that, yeah, bad things happen, but they're not always my fault. Children learn by example. So when you use your own positive voice, and I've got to do this myself, is, oh, I made a mistake, I'll have to learn to do it better, as opposed to, oh, Muser, you idiot. So that, you know, we've got to be aware of some of the things that we're saying out loud to ourselves. We've got to model and encourage children to say the same thing. You know, if I drop something, oh dear, I dropped it. Well, I will pick it up and put it away. That's too bad. Is better than, oh, I dropped it. How stupid could I be? You know, so that by modeling this and helping children, our children see that we're using our own positive voices as opposed to negative voices,
then that's a model for them and it encourages them to do the same. With some children, you can use the idea, school-age children really probably, of one little person on one shoulder cheers for you, and another one, this one person cheers for you, sticks up for you. The other person is mean and critical and nasty. So what you want to do is agree with the one who says nice things in your head, and when the nasty ones say no, that's not right. And kids can catch on to this. One of my kids themselves produced the fact that I have the good Jenny and the bad Jenny. The bad Jenny told me to do it. Remember to be your own best friend, and best friends are kind. These are concepts that kids can understand. Best friends are understanding, and best friends encourage us. Now, with young children, well, almost any age, but especially young children, we have a little, very complicated song. To the tune of Frere Jacques. So we can all sing it together.
I am special, I am special. You can look, you can see. Someone very special, someone very special. It is me, it is me.
So that's a little song that you can just sing when you're talking to your younger children about how important you are. It is really important for young children to begin to understand what stress feels like so that they can start to recognize it in their bodies. We know when we're stressed, we say things like, oh, you know, my neck is so tense or my shoulders are so sore. We know what the physical stress feels like and how it presents itself. Children often don't realize when they're feeling physically unwell that it's stress. So this is an exercise that can help children to actually begin to understand what stress feels like and also how to let it go. So you're just going to put your arms down at your sides. And I want you to squeeze your fists together really, really tight, tighter, and hold it. Hold it really hard. Can you feel what that feels like? And let it go. And shake it out a little bit. And this time, we're going to squeeze our fists, but we're also going to squeeze our arms against our body. Okay, so really, really tight. See, can you feel the shoulders start to come up and tighten up? And let it go and shake it out a little bit. Can you feel the difference between being all tensed up and shaking that out? This time, you're going to take your whole body and you're going to take your legs and squish them together and your arms and your fists and your whole body. Just tense it up really, really hard. Really, really tight. Keep squeezing. Squeeze. This is good for your aerobic muscles too. Okay. And let it go. And then don't forget to bounce your knees a little bit. Let some of that stress out. Okay. It feels good to let all of that go, doesn't it? That is something you can do with young children because it's very concrete. They can do those things with their bodies. And that helps them to begin to understand how their body feels when it's all tightened up with stress and how to let it go. So we've been talking a lot about de-stressing and helping children to de-stress, but we wanted to make sure that we sent you home tonight de-stressed as well. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to look at anything. You can close your packages. If you want, you can also close your eyes. And we're just going to do this last activity. Take a few moments to relax. Take some slow, deep breaths. This is an imagination activity. Anywhere you go in your mind, know that you will be safe and you are in control of your thoughts. I want you to go to a very special place. This place is any garden you wish it to be. In this garden, the air is fresh and clean. And the garden is bathed in warm sunlight. Lie down on the soft, cool grass
and the grass sinks softly as you lie down. The grass feels cool and the blades tickle your hands. Smell the sweetness of the grass and flowers that surround you, and slowly breathe in the fragrance of the flowers. As you lie comfortably in the grass, I want you to look up. You are lying beneath a large tree, and the leaves are emerald green. Look deeply into the layers and layers of leaves, and the leaves sway slowly in the breeze. The breeze brushes across your face and feels like cool silk. Listen carefully. A bird sings somewhere in the tree. In the distance, you hear puppies barking as they play. You hear distant voices of children playing. They are having fun. You can feel their happiness as they play. You feel happy too. Above you, the leaves sway and rustle in the breeze. And the breeze sweeps down and blows your hair. Gently and safely, it picks you up. You are as light as a feather. You are lifted up, then float down and settle on a high branch in the tree. The leaves are all around you. Reach out and touch them. The leaves feel soft and smooth. Take some time to stroke the leaves. Look up. Above you, the sky is blue and dotted with puffy white clouds. You can now feel the sun on your face, and it is warm. Soak in the warmth from the sun. Once again, you feel the breeze on your face, and it lifts you off the branch. As you float down, look around at your lush garden. You float ever so slowly back to the grass. Remain silent for a moment and slowly stretch and open your eyes and enjoy the feeling of being relaxed and refreshed. We want to take some time to say thank you for coming this evening and spending time with us. And remember to take care of your own stress. It's one of the best ways to help children deal with stress. We've also left some books on the counter for you to look at if you wanted to get some ideas of resources to use in your program. Thank you very much.